is intelligent in a different way. So going back to, again, the fake news and the real news, if you know how to use AI, you can use it really well. So I believe it's all assistive technology. It's not a replacement to agents or to basically any human being at this point.
Real estate touches every one of our lives, yet it is the last major industry to undergo a much-needed digital transformation. That's why the brightest minds, backed by the biggest investors, are on this mythical quest to build one app to rule them all. I'm Sharon Srivatsa, and he is Pritesh Damani, and we're breaking down the quest for real estate's holy grail. Welcome to the Super App Podcast.
This is probably the conversation that every single real estate agent is waiting for, and that is artificial intelligence when it comes to real estate. I'm here with the my main man, Pritesh Damani, the Jedi himself. And Pritesh, the conversation on every real estate agent's mind right now, every real estate industry professional's mind right now is artificial intelligence going to make that material an impact to our industry? Because it seems like such a manual, nuanced way of finding, searching, making it all happen. And the one thing is true. The one thing you and I have seen is there's so many specialists across along the way. There's a real estate agent that does a certain things. There's a mortgage broker that does a certain set of things. There's an appraiser that does a certain set of things. There's a search portal that has a certain set of things. There's a lead generation person that has a certain set of things. There is, all these are just certain set of things. But I want to talk about very broadly, maybe some thoughts around what is kind of fake news and real news when it comes to AI overall. And so here's a big question for you. Is there fake news?
Yeah, I think there's a lot of fake news, right? So,
I mean, you know how this goes. So let's take, before we answer that question, let's zoom out and let's ask each other, what's AI?
Yeah.
Right? So the answer would be different in 2022 and it will be different in 2023. This is the best part. Because AI is such a big field that in 2022, when people use the word AI, they meant machine learning.
Right.
In 2023, when they use AI, when they use the word AI, they mean LLM. So let's go explain machine learning and LLM. So machine learning is when you look at a lot of data and you understand trends in it, right? So let's just use a simple example. St. Petersburg, Florida. I take all the sale data that happened in the last 6 months and I correlate that with weather data, right? When did it rain, right? And then I try to figure out some sort of analysis, right? So if I just have those two data points, right? And when did it rain and how hard did it rain, right? So it's 0 to 100, right? And this would be actually, if someone did this, I would be very curious myself. And you say, okay, when I list my property for sale in the next 30 days, what was the rain scenario? And I have a feeling that you could probably find some correlation that if it rained 10 days in a row, your property took much longer to sell than it would be if it didn't rain that month.
So is this this is really good. Is this a lot of people talk about if a real estate agent is sitting in a living room talking to a client and they're unsure of how to price the home coming to market. And they say, well, Mr. or Mrs. Client, here's a model that you can utilize it that's based on, 10, 15 years of data points. And if we listed here, this is where the potential sale price will be. If we listed here, this is where the potential sales price would be. Is that machine learning?
It could be, but this is where so the answer is it could be. But the problem is, did you pick the right parameters? And this is where it becomes fake news. So you and I know that the value of the home should not change based on rain, right? But if you just use those two data points, the value of the home, how long, maybe three, or how long it took to sell, and was it raining that month or not, you will be able to find some correlation. Now, is that, and the machine learning algorithm would say, hey, if it rains, just take it off the market. Are you going to really do this? You're probably not. You'll be like, no, it just makes no sense, right? So clearly that's what I would consider under the category of fake news, but that's machine learning, right? So going back to your question, if a model was the problem with real estate, and similarly, stock market has the same problem, is the variables are too many and the market conditions are different. The market last year versus the year before versus this year, nobody would predict COVID. Nobody would predict influx of cash in the economy. Nobody would predict interest rate going to nearly
zero, right? People getting homes for like 2.5%, 2.2%. Nobody would predict that. And even right now, we're trying to predict what's going to happen next year. It's 7.5% right now, like, you know, in November 2023. What happens November 2024? People are like, okay, it's going to be 5%, 5.5%. Hopefully. But no, it's again a prediction. So how do you know when to list your home? So there are variables that don't exist and the variables that are out of our control, so machines can be trained on it. So machine learning is good for some things, it's not good for most things. So that's machine learning. And then 2023 came in, and which is called large language models, and a different name for it will be ChatGPT. And the simplest way to explain ChatGPT, when I explain it to my daughter who's 7, is what is the most likely word to follow this word? It's almost likely that it's the.
Yeah, yeah.
Right? So all that is that, literally. So what does that mean? You take all of Wikipedia, you train a machine, and you say, tokenize these things so it reads every word, and it just literally memorizes the sequences and memorizes the number of times it saw the same sequence, and then it will say, you give it a context, so it will, you say, I'm looking at a greenhouse or something, and now it will put that at the beginning. I'm looking at the greenhouse. And then you say, give me, tell me what kind of roof should I have? And it will start talking about it, but it remembers I'm looking at a greenhouse. And then from all its memory, every word that comes in, it looks at all the previous words and then figures out the most likely word to come in. And it makes sense because it's been trained on so much data, right? So it sounds like someone intelligent is speaking to you, but it could literally make things up because it doesn't actually truly understand what it's making up, right? It just says things. So it works really well for a listing presentation. It works really well for marketing presentations, press releases, emails. But try asking 2 + 2 or try asking like 24 times 58. It's a very good chance it's going to get it wrong. Very good chance. Again, like, is it intelligent? It's like, it can't do basic multiplication. How can it be intelligent? But it's intelligent in a different way. So going back to, again, the fake news and the real news, if you know how to use AI, you can use it really well. So I believe it's all assistive technology. It's not a replacement to agents or to basically any human being at this point.
Yeah, so what makes it... So we're talking about this fake news stuff. And one of the things that we're seeing is in so many different pieces of software, everything from a Canva to Notion to, you know, Gmail to wherever, whatever piece of software that we use, now there's this little badge that says AI available. Question for you on how much of that is, hey, I, the tool maker, feel like I have to do this to stay competitive, and how much of this is like actually utilizable for the user?
Let's take some examples. So you just made me remember this word, generative AI, right? Like, so, which is another word for LLM. Like, it's generating things, but when it generates words, it becomes large language models. But like, when it generates images, it's like generative AI, right? And if it generates videos, which is nothing but a sequence of images, right? It's just thousands of images put together, becomes a video, right? So in some cases, it makes sense. Can you create a layout for me, a floor plan, or even can you create a, fake furniture in my, like, can you stage my home? And it generates these things. It's pretty incredible. It would cost you anywhere from $1,000 to $2,000 to stage a home. It now costs you $1 to stage a home. And it does a pretty good job, right? So that's assistive technology. You should be using this, right? So no brainer. However, then there's generating images where you say, like, put a teddy bear on a tree. I mean, it's fun, but when are you going to use it? I've seen Instagram. I've seen Instagram after Instagram about, like, someone standing on a football field. And then they say, put a castle here. And then they say, put a lake on top. Then they say, put a rainbow on top. Okay, great. This is really amazing technology. But what is the practical use of that technology?
Yeah. Yeah.
Right? So that, again, like, this is where it, like, you know, it's all futuristic and some of it will become useful, but not all of it.
The question, you know, I think that is on a lot of people's minds is, should I bother learning and investing time right now on these tools? Or should I just wait till they get to a point of product maturity where I know that I can very easily take this thing to do this job?
Product maturity in technology is just like such a hard thing to achieve. It's like, I think most products are never mature, right? So, I mean, look at Microsoft Windows is a great example. It's been like 30 years or something that Windows is around. But have you ever heard of someone saying Windows is amazing? They'll always be like, oh, it sucks and something is broken, something could be improved. But if you compare Windows 3.1 to now, you'd be like, oh my God, right? So it's always like, I think you should just use the technology the way it is and like, you know, it will keep improving and like, but if you don't use it for 5 years, you're probably the only dinosaur who's not using it.
So this brings me to this next point, right? Which is, okay, so we have this generic AI. So you and I and everyone else in the world can go get the $5 a month or whatever it is on ChatGPT if we want the full version. And we could start punching in things and playing around with it. What is, you were kind of stuck with that, meaning you had that opportunity to say, well, AI can very easily integrate ChatGPT into the systems that we work on day to day. But I remember our conversation where you said, hey man, we have something that is different. We are fortunate that we have all this proprietary data and we can have these large language models make sense of this proprietary data, which is what makes it personalized to you. So what is the difference between utilizing something generic versus utilizing something specific?
Yeah, so that's a great way to put it, right? So going back to the Lego blocks that we talked about before, right? We at Real, there was massive investment put in to build all these proprietary technologies. And the advantage, the implicit advantage of having that was all the data was available out of the gate. And when LLM came around, LLM is like, so these GPT products, they are trained on ready-made, like fully available infrastructure, like knowledge, right? Wikipedia is a great example. 60%, I think 50 or 60% of the corpus is like literally Wikipedia, right? So if you just take that in and start asking questions like, am I capped or like, you know, what's my GCI this year? It has no idea who you are. So how do you even ask meaningful questions? Well, so what we did was we took our information and we trained these models up to understand you. So when you ask questions, it actually is aware of all your data and is trained just for you. Every instance is special for you and it can answer meaningfully. And then we actually took it to the next level. So we use these GPT products to almost to make it sound human more than actually for the intelligence. It's really kind of funny the way we use it. So when you say, hey, what's my last transaction? What we do is we try to understand what you're trying to ask us. Then we actually make an API call to our system. We draw, pull your transactions out. Summarize it with summarization tools, which have nothing, which is the different set of technologies, plumb it back into a large language models, and then say, hey, say this back to the user. And it sounds like someone is like actually saying it in English to you. And it sounds like it reads like magic because it's like, hey, Pritesh, for to do this, blah, 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 blah. Right? But it was a very long about roundabout way of getting you the answer. Like, I mean, the easiest way would be you going in the UI and just clicking a button and just seeing the answer, right? Like, it's the same thing. The problem is that when your interfaces have so much information that most people, like, don't even know where to start. So it's like, you've gotten to a point where your UI is complex and people want insights, not reports.
Well, but that's a super interesting thing because even if the simplest example that as you were sharing comes to mind between the old, like the original kind of web 1.0 of Yahoo, which had a directory and Google, which just had a search bar. Cause I was like, I had to traverse this UI to get to the answer. And I'm just like, I should just be able to search, which is why that took off. Right. And we've been talking about products or features where we're like, hey, wait a minute. We can just leapfrog and not even build a piece of UI for this in a lot of things. Like I remember there are countries where, you know, they had telecom, they had no landlines and they just got cell phones. And I think just the fact that we can think about products and solutions right now where we don't have to, like we're thinking AI first as opposed to UI first.
This is actually pretty good. Like we should use that more often. with AI first and UI first. But I agree with you 100%. This is how our product teams are now thinking. It's like, is this something that people will actually want to go and click 15 buttons, or is this something Leo should be suggesting to them? So, you know, now with Leo 2.0, they are suggesting, like our AI technology is suggesting, hey, are you here to ask this question? And these questions are very subjective. Like, you're looking at a transaction and we know where this transaction is. Oh, it's about to close. You must be here to like figure out where your money is. Or this transaction is not conveyed in the Canada and you must be here to figure out why is it not conveyed. So instead of like trying to decipher 15 different data points and understand which is reports, you're looking for some kind of report to understand the meaning of that report versus an insight would be finish item number 1 and 2.
So this brings me to like, I think that two questions to kind of cap all of this off. Question number one. Hey, I'm listening. I don't have any technical expertise. I don't have access to, maybe I'm a real, maybe I'm not, doesn't matter. But I have, when I log into a piece of software online, maybe as simple as Gmail or on a Canva or whatever tool that I use, it says, use AI. So that's question number one. What is your feedback to the, or guidance to that person thinking, hey, when it says use AI, are you saying, hey, wait till it gets to a more mature point? Should you use it and try it? What should they expect? Like, give us some guidance around how does a day-to-day person in the industry approach these tools that are being put in front of them?
I think I would try it. If you're already paying for the subscription and it says use AI, just go try it. It might end up doing things that you find yourself doing, right? The same way we solve our problems, like with like, okay, we are going to build AI that's going to like preemptively answer some questions for you. At the moment, that's the case, right? They might have also built something meaningful. So I'll tell you an example of a product that I use and I find it helpful, where AI is helpful. I use this email client called Superhuman. I think you use it too, right? And they, a couple of days ago, they launched a feature called Summarize. So it looks at my email thread and literally summarizes on top. I know for a fact, this is prob. There's a 95% chance that they're using like ChatGPT underneath and they're using their summarization features, right? They're probably, adjusting the data a little bit, but they're probably using that. So again, however, I'm not going to copy paste my 15 emails into ChatGPT to get a summarization. So this is like a good use of AI. This is a good productization of AI, right? Like a meaningful way that something is meaningful. We have a meeting tool that summarizes our meetings for us and it's getting really good at it. So these are good uses of AI. So if your Zoom thing shows you like, hey, AI companion, you might want to click on it because it's probably going to summarize your meeting for you and you might be having a note taker taking notes for you, then that's not necessary anymore, right? But then there is generate the image for me or something like that.
Dude, that's, by the way, even though that seems so far-fetched, it's so cool. Like for you to be able to say, like I'll tell you this thing that I did. I got to send you this photo. I created this photo of King Solomon wearing Air Jordans and with an iPhone in one hand and a Diet Coke in the other hand. There's no way King Solomon wore Air Jordans, had an iPhone on one hand and Diet Coke in the other hand. And if you looked at it, you're like, something looks off, but it looks super cool. The reason I did that was I wanted to use that in one of my presentations. I wanted to show how do you combine old world human psychology with modern world tools. And I had no way of showing that. So I said, okay, how do I combine, like, how do I show an image that clicks into people's minds of, hey, human psychology has not changed for a while, but you still need to use modern tools. And it was just a way for me to like show that. But after the presentation, Pritesh, 9 out of 10 people that I talk to, whenever I talk to people, I always ask them this one question. Hey, what is one slide that you remember? I don't ask them what you liked. I don't ask them what you took away. I just ask them, what is one slide that you remember? Because I want to know visually, because they, without judgment, they answer the question. And 9 out of 10 people say, man, the King Solomon slide like really stuck with me, which is super interesting because it's a great pattern interrupt, right? So here's the holy grail question. Not only for us at Real, but for a lot of these AI tools. And this is probably how we cap it off, which is how do we get more comfort for our users, our agents, our friends, our family that are using the tool? how do we get them to click the button and use the AI features more?
I think there's a lot of misconception around, hey, is AI replacing me? I really don't think anybody should be worried about this anytime soon. Like, I think we are like 20 to 30 years away from anything like reasonably like amazing that's happening in AI. It will evolve, but like, nothing is getting replaced anytime soon. It's too hard. It's really just too hard. I think they've made a good leap, but if you go back to the beginning of like our talk, right? What is large language model? Just guessing the next word, not guessing, but probabilistically guessing your next word. It feels pretty dumb once you say it out loud. Like, it's not AI anymore. It's just statistical models running really fast, right? What's the most likely word? So how can that be considered super smart? It doesn't truly understand the meaning of it. Maybe my interpretation of it is not accurate. Maybe it just truly understand the meaning. Maybe, like, I know from a technical standpoint, our brain works the same way these AI models are working. They are neural nets. So there are neurons firing the next neuron, and every neuron is weighted. So it picks which neuron to fire, and the strongest one fires, which is exactly how these algorithms work. So maybe it is just that, but it's still not smart enough. Like, you know, the density of our brain is too high, and we're not there. Silicons are not there yet.
But how do we get the users? How do you promote usage? How do you get people to stop utilizing the UI and start utilizing the AI?
Okay, if you're asking me from a product standpoint, how would I get people to do this? If I was building something, I would suggest. Because that's what we learned, right? Leo 2.0 was Leo trying to get more interaction out of you. Because what stumps most people is what they don't know what to ask. Because it's a space bar and you can type anything you want. So they don't even know how to ask the question, right? And oftentimes when they ask the question, they didn't structure it perfectly, so they don't get the response that they want, right? So when we suggest in Leo, when we are suggesting these questions, we're helping them write the right question because we know the answer and we know what the most likely question they're going to ask. It's a very gamified system in many ways because, like, we kind of know why you're in the app based on, you know, the time of the day and the transactions you have, right? So, but going back to the mythical quest to the super app, why are we talking about this, right? And I think this will all make sense when we go to our next episode about, like, how does AI, you know, maybe we'll talk about that. Like, how does AI kind of play into the super app game? But that might be interesting.
So here's the last question. Do you think that we're talking about, you know, when you're given a search bar and you don't know what to type into it, Google did a good job of it. They figured that out too. And they started doing this kind of auto-complete, auto-suggest. Do you think that there's an evolution of that feature on the products we're working on?
Yeah, I think the auto-complete feature comes from what are other people asking. So they know, they just keep track of that. Versus an auto-complete feature on, like, figuring out intent is a little different. But we are working on an iteration of that, which is where we are suggesting these questions, right? I can see like a marriage. We got to think about it a little bit, but I think I can see a marriage where it's both.
Yeah. Hey, everybody, this is the Jedi Pitestamani. The entire purpose of our episode today was to give you the only 20-minute primer that you need to know to realize and figure out everything that you need to know about AI, how it works, the key terminology, and what it can do for you, your business, and your life. So the big takeaway here is it's coming. It's not going to replace you, but you should probably start playing with it because maybe it can help you. Hey, this is Sharon. If you sell real estate, I have a cool gift for you. I packaged up my 7 best money-making trainings for real estate agents called the Top Agent Power Pack. It's raw and real, and it's 100% free as our gift to you. Just go to topagentpowerpack.com and grab it right now for free. That's topagentpowerpack.com.